And welcome back to the Pomp and Joe Show. Jason Mackey, Austin Bechtold with you on a Thursday here in Pittsburgh. Having a great time. Thanks so much for finding us. Bouncing back and forth between Steelers and Pirates topics. Spent the last hour talking baseball. The Pirates are a hard team to figure out, Austin. Sweeping the Tigers, looking really good. Bailey Falter, I thought, was outstanding yesterday. Spencer Horwitz, all of a sudden, I don't know. He might be turning into something. Had a really good series, 7 for 12. Hits his first career Grand Slam yesterday. I don't know whether it was just a good three-game stretch or whether Mr. Horwitz has figured something out at the plate, but man, that would sure help them if he did.
And the Pirates have just made an announcement too, Jason, that for the remainder of the season, they will wear a special jersey patch to honor the Cobra, Dave Parker.
Yep, I knew that was coming. That was a matter of announcement, and glad they're doing it.
Why not earlier? I mean, does it take that long to make a jersey patch?
I don't know.
Why wasn't this announced 3 weeks ago?
I know.
Like, I'm glad they're doing it. They should be doing it.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised it's taken this long.
Yeah, plans have been in the works. They should. You know, I am very excited to go up to Cooperstown this weekend. I know that.
It's a cool patch, too.
It is a cool patch.
Good silhouette of Parker.
Did it right?
You've seen it already, Jason.
Yes.
Ah. Mm. How about that?
Good stuff. The right thing by the Pirates. And this weekend in Cooperstown is going to be a lot of fun, too, by the way, honoring Dave Parker. The late Dave Parker, but an incredible part of Pirates history. Cooperstown, always a good time, and will be interesting to hear the perspective from other Hall of Famers on what Dave Parker meant to them as well. I want to wrap up our Pirates portion of the conversation with a call or two. Kevin in the North Hills has been waiting to talk about year six. I don't want to ignore Kevin. I appreciate the phone call. You're on the Fan. Kevin, what's up?
Hey, Jason, I am with you. I've had this argument with a couple of my baseball friends. They want to sell everybody now at their peak value, like Bednar and Keller. And I mean, when does it all end? I mean, you got to keep your good players, and then the management team has to step up, spend some money, get a good corner outfielder, maybe get a good corner infielder. I like Horwitz. Maybe move Key Brian Hayes to shortstop. Get a good bat at third base because they certainly need that. But do not start getting rid of your good players. I mean, I go to games to watch the good players.
Yeah. I mean, Kevin, here's where I'm at on that. And I'm not completely – I'm against trading Mitch Keller right now. I'm not against trading Mitch Keller in December if the right deal comes along. And what they need to do is fix the offense. Like, that much is plain and simple. And if your best solution for that is to trade Mitch, then I get it. I would try to trade something else. I would try to trade from your younger pitching depth so you're not removing somebody as good and proven as Mitch Keller is. But bottom line, they have to get more offense, man, some way, shape, or form. Like, if that's going to cost you Mitch Keller, I'm willing to make that sacrifice because they're not going to win anything with an offense the way it is right now.
Yeah, and they also need to maybe spend a little bit more money and
sure.
Take some risks.
Yep.
Take some risks. Put some, and if you put a decent team on the field, they'll put fans in the stands. I went to Monday game. I'm going tomorrow. I mean, I'm still going to games.
Yeah, I mean that is a perpetual rallying cry, and you're not wrong. You want to see him spend on players. I mean, that was a big whiff this offseason, spending on processes. They should have spent on players. They were wrong. You're spending on analytics and stuff behind the scenes, and it's a good gamble if it works. If you want to be the Rays and the Guardians and you can be the best small market team possible, they pour a lot of money into that stuff. The problem with the Pirates is they've done it poorly. So thanks for the call, man.
You.
Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to Scott in the car. Wants to talk about the Pirates. What's up, Scott?
Hey, how are you guys today?
We're great. How are you?
Trying to stay cool. So last segment, you guys were chatting about the whether to make the decision of like changing the finances of baseball, new ownership, or a great department to scout and recruit.
Yes.
And all that kind of jazz.
All right.
Okay, so I kind of have the definitive answer for this, which is if you look at the way baseball is now, the overriding, overarching problem is the financial structure. The financial structure allows some of these teams to basically just profit the profit sharing that they take from the revenue share and basically put crap on the field, which I think some of the other markets are kind of catching wind about and are maybe a little frustrated about. to me, if you change the financial structure of baseball, you probably change the other two along with it, because nothing at this point won't automatically make his profit. He's going to have to put a good product on the team. And, gee, to put a good product on the team, you're going to have good scouting in the development department.
You're not wrong, Scott. I think we made that point, that one may force the other. And I credit Limits for opening my eyes to a different way of thinking. My immediate answer was change the owner. But I think there's a different way of approaching this.
Yeah, I don't think changing the owner is a bad thing if you get a good owner who actually wants to win, like some of these other small market teams are having lucky ownerships that, like, hey, I want to win. I want to put a good product on the field. I want to have, develop a great structure and a great organization. But we don't have that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things are lacking. I agree, along with option number three, where you're talking about a baseball operations department that's on par with the best in the business. You know, the Pirates should be that, and they're not.
Exactly. Hey, have a great day.
Thanks. You too, Scott. Thank you, man. Good baseball discussion. I appreciate the phone call. We'll go a little overtime on that. But now let's move into some Steelers. I talked before the break about some position battles, and there's going to be so much intrigue in Latrobe. I am flat out pumped for this. There's no other way to slice it. I think you are too. I hope you are too. You know, there's going to be a lot to see. Under center, of course, we're watching Aaron Rodgers, but there's no real uncertainty there. The only uncertainty is how much Aaron Rodgers has left. In a lot of places, the Steelers are actually pretty set. But there's a couple positions that I think are really interesting, and three specifically, on who winds up where, who gets more reps. And I want to go through those. And if you have any thoughts on who you want to see, if I'm missing anything, always appreciate the feedback, 412-928-9370. But the first place I'm going to look, running back, Jaylen Warren and Caleb Johnson. You know, it's not a traditional positional battle, right? I mean, Jaylen Warren has sat behind Najee Harris. He's done a good job. He's been a productive backup. He's been an explosive player when given opportunity. All that stuff. I have absolutely nothing against Jaylen Warren, and he should get first crack at this job. And if you're looking at divvying up carries, you know, even if we dummy out like 25 carries, I want Jaylen Warren taking about half of those. But I want to get Caleb Johnson involved. I think he's a really good fit. And I'm curious to see how this goes. Caleb Johnson is a workhorse. He's a big back. He's somebody that the Steelers could really use. I think he's a better scheme fit. Ran a lot of outside zone stuff at Iowa. He's 6 foot, 225 pounds. Oddly, and I'm curious to see this up close, I did a feature on him earlier this summer. He might remind us a little of Le'Veon Bell. He's got a patient running style. He's not a hit the hole immediately kind of guy. It's one thing I really like about Jaylen Warren. He's not afraid to, he's not hesitating. Jaylen Warren's going to make up his mind and go. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. Absolutely. But what I'm curious to see is how this balance gets struck. And maybe we learn that throughout Latrobe. Maybe we learn that at the beginning of the season. Involve the young guys. Throw more on the shoulders of Caleb Johnson and see what he can take. If you want to maybe use him early on, early in downs, early in camp, okay. Caleb Johnson is not as experienced in the passing game. One of the knocks against him is not catching a ton of passes out of the backfield and also pass blocking. It works out well for the Steelers that Caleb Johnson, or Jaylen Warren rather, has some experience doing that. He's really good in pass pro. So lean on him for what he does well. When you can get Caleb Johnson going, maybe in some early downs, great. Let's see what he can do. And as long as this continues, and as long as it continues, I think, the way many of us expect it to, there's going to be an interesting timeshare here. And Jaylen Warren's making a pretty good amount of money this year with the tender the Steelers gave him. You know, maybe this is the last year for Jaylen Warren in Pittsburgh. I have no idea. I don't think they know. I think you need the intel provided throughout the year. But I know Caleb Johnson's a rookie. There's a lot of meat on the bone, and I want to see what he can do. He strikes me, based on what he did in Iowa, his makeup, his build, somebody that can carry it quite a bit. So I'll be curious to see where this goes. It's obviously not the only one. As we talk about interesting position battles and areas of intrigue, wide receiver's another one. And again, it's not a traditional position battle. Zach Azani, the Steelers wide receivers coach, during minicamp basically said that Calvin Austin's their second wide receiver, at least as of now. Maybe the Steelers bring somebody in. I don't know. Maybe Robert Woods recaptures some of his early career form. I don't know. Be great if he did. I'd prefer they add somebody. Either way, I think Calvin Austin III is going to play a pretty substantial role in the offense. The more curious spot is beyond him. And what happens with Roman Wilson? Third-round pick from last year. They're very similar players. Calvin Austin III's 40 time, combine 4.32. We view him a lot as a speedster. That's his best weapon. Roman Wilson wasn't very far behind, 4.39. Roman Wilson has a little bit better size than Calvin Austin, obviously has much less experience. Injury-marred rookie season. I'm not giving up on Roman Wilson. I think pure blocking ability, Roman Wilson is far ahead of Calvin Austin III. And do they end up competing for the same sort of support role? Or did they not add anybody? Calvin Austin becomes your two and Roman Wilson becomes more of a slot guy. I don't know. I think it's a lot to ask of Roman Wilson at this point to expect him to become your number two wide receiver. But I think there's a possibility, if things go according to plan, that he gets some snaps, like a significant number of snaps. If you're telling me a third-round pick and Caleb Johnson can play right away, I don't see why Roman Wilson, with at least some portions of 1 year in, why he can't play. It'll be an interesting thing to see play out. The last one is at linebacker. We talked earlier about a Landon Roberts and the Steelers electing not to keep a Landon Roberts. I don't like the move. It worries me. I don't know if it's going to be more impactful than losing Minka Fitzpatrick. Might be the same, I'm not sure, but there is plenty of opportunity at inside linebacker next to Patrick Queen. Peyton Wilson had a very good rookie year, was overshadowed in some ways, finished with 78 tackles, 3 tackles for a loss, an interception, a forced fumble, made some key plays at key times. I thought he did really well in the passing game. And Cole Holcomb is actually back healthy. It's somebody that I know in my own role, transitioning from baseball to columnist and then having my head in football way more than I did previously, I don't really have as much familiarity with Cole Holcomb because he was hurt. But he's actually been around the block, has a lot of experience. I don't think it's somebody that the Steelers have designs on sitting. I don't think they completely know how the middle of their defense is going to pan out at this point. Like, you know Patrick Queen's going to play a lot, but beyond him, do we see a lot of Peyton Wilson? Do we see a lot of Cole Holcomb? What becomes of Malik Harrison? There's some questions to answer. But do those two get on the field together? Does Cole Holcomb give you enough to give him a regular role? Does Peyton Wilson take the next step in his evolution? I know I spent some time this morning thinking about Peyton Wilson at NC State. Remember when the Steelers got him in the draft? That felt like the biggest steal. Their second, third round pick. And he only fell that low because of injuries. He stayed healthy. He was productive for most of last season and was very good. You could see why he was thought so highly of. And the only thing he got dinged against coming out of college was health. So if he's healthy in his second year after a productive rookie season, why shouldn't he be able to transition to a regular role in the middle of an NFL defense? I don't know how it's going to play out. I don't know if it's going to be more Peyton Wilson or more Cole Holcomb. But I can tell you I'm very interested to see how this finishes. Limits, am I missing anything? What are you excited to see about training camp?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see, obviously, Aaron Rodgers, first and foremost. Quarterback is the key to the team and how he ultimately performs. And, you know, as long as he's not throwing interceptions like Jackson Dart did on his first throw at camp yesterday. Did you see that?
Ooh, did Mr. Starkey see that? That's
the
question.
That's a great question. First throw, one of the first throws, at least, that Dart made was a walk-in pick six. It was bad, like a tunneled throw immediately. I mean, I could have probably read his eyes that he was going to be able to throw the ball there. That's neither here nor there. So I'm excited to be able to see what Rodgers ultimately does with Metcalf, the chemistry that he forms with Jonnu Smith and Pat Freiermuth, because I feel like those are the three biggest targets and the three biggest weapons. You're right on safety. I mean, I don't know what to make of Juan Thornhill. I don't think he's a starter. Losing Minka, I think, is more hurtful than people realize. Like, a lot of people think that losing Minka is addition by subtraction. Look, Minka did not play well over the last 2 years. He's still a good tackler. The communication skills needed to be improved, no doubt. But there was a lot of big plays that just frankly did not happen because Minka was back there. So was he an all-pro? Was he a Pro Bowler? No. He also wasn't like a horrible player.
Right. He just wasn't worth the cap hit.
He just was not worth the cap hit. So my eyes are mainly on quarterback, wide receiver, safety, but I'm not keeping it away from the offensive line either, where Broderick Jones is the most important player in all of training camp for them.
Ooh, this season will go. There's a take.
This season will go as far as obviously Aaron Rodgers, but Aaron Rodgers and Broderick Jones really tandem paired together can help take them because Jones is going to be the one that has to keep Rodgers upright. And if he can't do that, it is going to be a long season. If he can protect Rodgers, then there's a chance that the Steelers could surprise some people.
So let me ask you this, Limits. The question I was pondering this morning as well. Where are the potential downfalls for this team? Like, let's poke holes in it. Let's put our negative hats on. And I don't mean like everything goes back to Tomlin. Mike Tomlin stinks. I mean, like, looking at the roster, what areas legitimately concern us? That if something happens, if something doesn't happen, where could the potential downfall of this team start?
So I talked about this a little bit yesterday, and the main points that I basically came to were the offensive line.
That was my number one.
Troy Faltanu on the right side has not played a full season. He's played only a handful of snaps. Broderick Jones playing at left tackle for the first time. I like McCormick, but I still have some questions at right guard.
What about depth, man? The backups?
And there's no depth.
There's no depth.
It's Spencer Anderson, Ryan McCullough, Max Sharping. They're guys that you might, you know, not be able to sharpie in to the lineup if they need to be played. Where you want to talk about where you can spend some extra money and you have it on offense, I'd be fine paying somebody extra money just to be a good backup. I don't care if you're paying somebody $5 million to be a backup tackle. You know, if that's what you need in case Broderick Jones falters or in case Faltanu gets hurt again. Their offensive line has stayed relatively healthy. Like, I know Daniels was hurt last year and Faltanu the whole year. But there's going to be injuries. It's just going to happen. And they have no depth behind the current guys that I feel comfortable with. There's no B.J. Finney. There's no Chris Hubbard on this team.
Right. I know. The offensive line depth concerns me. And my two and three are areas that we touched on a little bit. Just safety depth. Juan Thornhill, I know we can look at this one way and say everything's going to go great, but what if it doesn't?
Yeah.
I think that's a potential area of weakness, and do enough wide receivers pan out? Do they have enough pass-catching options? Because it is a little too similar to what we heard last year about, oh, tight ends, they're going to throw to the tight ends more. It doesn't matter if it's DK Metcalf and a bunch of other guys. It doesn't matter if it's George Pickens and a bunch of other guys. We have tight ends.
How about Thornhill yesterday blamed the media in Cleveland?
It's always the media's
fault. He said that if you actually watch the tape, he plays very well and nobody throws towards him. That it's just the media creating the narrative around
Thornhill. Buddy, you signed a bargain basement deal for the Steelers where you may or may not be the starter. Like, I'm pretty sure
when he signed,
the rest of the NFL wasn't basing their evaluation of you on the media.
When he signed as a backup because Minka was still here when he signed in March.
But it was the media's fault.
You know, the media.
Media.
That's why you never
got a media guy
starting job anywhere else.
That's all right. Whatever people need to sharpen their edge, man. I don't care. Media is used for a lot of things. You can make us a I don't know, whipping boy or something, if that's the right term. You can blame us.
Yeah,
I don't
blame
really
the
care.
Media. Go right ahead.
Couldn't care less.